On Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. We will start off with a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2150. And we'll get a briefing on the, or an overview from Mazen.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, House Bill 2150 comes to you from the House Revenue Committee. And previous to that, it went through economic development. House Bill 2150 does is primarily tries to go into a new way of filing and paying taxes for businesses who file with the OLCC. This allows for electronic filing and electronic payment of taxes. At the time at the House, there was a fiscal statement that said there will be costs and efforts to actually go through this process. And I think the testimony at that time said that it will be a project, an IT project for the OLCC. And I suspect this is what brings the Dash One amendment that we just got over the weekend, which pushes the implementation date from January to July. So that's what the bill does.
Paul Romaine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm here representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. We're in full support of the bill and the amendment to push it to its actually July of 2019, a year and a half out. And this will just be much more efficient. It brings it into modern times, and we save a few trees. So thank you. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I guess it falls into that category of, do we really need a bill? The law to do this? I guess the answer is yes. But.
We're more comfortable, Mr. Chair, with everything in writing that we are moving to this. So a bill is, the OLCC feels it's necessary. We always do what the OLCC tells us to do.
I assume the department is here to talk.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Renee Niedermeyer.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Renee Niedermeyer. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the OLCC. And what I thought I'd do is just give just a little background about the potential for online privilege tax and what the existing system is today. Currently, beer and wine tax collections account for about $38 million in revenue during the biennium. Now we have 4,700 different entities that report manually. They're breweries, wineries, brew pubs, warehouses, wholesalers, out-of-state manufacturers of beer and wine. Generally, the tax reports are required monthly. In total, about 28,000 paper forms are filled out by licensees during the year. Of those, each form has about 5 pages, so we have about 140,000 pages of paper during the year. That said, the development of an online system is a major technology project which requires stage gate planning through the state, which is the protocols for technology projects by the offices, the State Chief Information Officer and the Legislative Fiscal Office. and complying with that process requires developing and issuing requests for proposals, awarding the contract, doing all your business planning, and building the online system. And along with building the online system and training, that's why we're in support of the Dash 1 amendment that moves that deadline should this bill get passed. That stage gate process requires a complete business analysis, the business case, and developing that project plan and scope. If an electronic system would basically eliminate paper forms for the licensees, and they would be able to go online and bring up all their past information and help repopulate the forms and then pay that privilege tax electronically. For the licensee, it would really reduce the paper, and it would help the agency as well, but only if the back end of the system is built. And so that's one of the things that we learned on our online marijuana system. We had to do that so quickly, we were able to develop a portal, and now we're working on doing that back end management, because it doesn't help to just get all that paper coming in electronically and then having to do the manual system behind it. So that's why we're in support of the Dash 1 amendments as well, to develop time to get those business processes in place.
Thank you. So you're listed as neutral on this bill, but it sounds like there would be some efficiencies for the agency.
We're supportive of we're listed as neutral because as a state agency we are neutral. That said, if we recognize the issue, we recognize the need, and it's a matter of timing for the state. We know that there's a budget crisis, and so that's why on one hand we're supportive, but we understand should it not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we know the cost of the project. Do we know the cost if we don't do the project?
The cost if we don't do the project is we will continue the manual systems, and we'll continue with the staffing that we had as we add new people, as we get more and more licensees and do more and more of these, then we will need to add more people. The other thing that we're not getting done right now is we're not doing as much, we're processing the paper. We're not doing some of the auditing that we feel we should be doing.
So you didn't really answer my question, but so what does it cost in people that you wouldn't need? What are our savings, actual dollar savings?
Okay. Senator Riley, we have four people working on the privileged tax reporting right now. And our expectation, until we have the system built, we don't know what that savings would be. It depends on how much efficiency we can build from that. Should we get that efficiency, which we hope to do, our request would be to redeploy those people and work on auditing a privilege tax and then on our distillery agents.
Okay, I'll be looking really closely at the stage gate to see where you're going with that. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And Representative Leininger is here to talk about this bill.
Thank you so much, Chair Haas and members of the committee. I'm Ann Leininger from House District 38, Lake Oswego in Southwest Portland. I'm here in support of House Bill 2150 because it is an important part of a suite of bills that we've been working on this session in the House Economic Development and Trade Committee that are intended to help reduce the barriers and transaction costs and hassles that producers of beer, wine, distilled spirits, cider face as they try to operate their businesses and grow market share. This bill is one of a number of steps that we can take to help reduce the costs, essentially, and the hassles of running these businesses so employers can focus on the good work, the world-class work that they do of making these value-added products that have traded sector sales that also tie in by starting with rural agriculture. They really hit so many of the important things that we need to do to grow jobs and opportunity in Oregon. And so I'm here to support it and say that I believe it got a unanimous vote out of the Economic Development and Trade Committee, and I believe it also went to our House Revenue Committee and got support there, strong support on the floor. There is now an effort, as I suspect Ms. Niedermeyer noted to you, to enable to have one amendment that would push back the operative date of part of the bill so that OLCC can work on developing the necessary infrastructure and then have the launch date for when it starts be a really attainable time. Based on the incredibly close work that I've been doing with OLCC over the last 2.5 years, I have to say, with the Marijuana Committee, I have to say that I find that team and Ms. Niedermeyer and the top leaders there to be so incredibly effective and able to get things done that my confidence in our ability to help this work move forward is strengthened and made really robust by virtue of the wonderful team that's going to be working together on that. So I encourage your support for the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? We do have the amendment, the dash one, and pushes it out a year and a half or so, and appreciate that. I think we're probably good to go, but because of that amendment, we don't have the necessary reports to pass it today.
Okay.
But we will.
So.
Really.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to note I am supportive of the bill, and I'm not sure that a year and a half is enough for this IT project, but we'll worry about that next year.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So we will revisit this probably on Wednesday, maybe. Carry it over to Wednesday. And carry over 2150 till Wednesday. I'll close out that work session and open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3171. Overview from Kyle.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3171A is a measure that's making changes to a property tax. Really, it's a what happens following a property tax special assessment once the special assessment is no longer, or the property is no longer specially assessed. And so just a little background real quickly. Special assessment, generally thinking farm or forest land are kind of the most popular. When the property, it receives special assessment while it's in the farm use or the maybe timber use or something to that effect. But while it's under special assessment, it's being specially assessed. When it comes out of special assessment, under current law, dependent upon the circumstances of the property and how it was used, there are 5 or 10 years in back taxes that are owed when the property comes out of special assessment. And those back taxes are equal to the amount of the tax that would have otherwise been paid had it not been specially assessed. So what House Bill 3171A is doing is it's making some changes. There are instances in statute where when a property comes out of special assessment, it's not subject to those back taxes, those 10 and 5 years. And 3171A is making really a modification to some of the statute, and it's in response to a court case that came out of the Port of Morrow and Morrow County. There's some background information on that case in the SMS. But it was really about the timing. So the Port of Morrow was leasing some property to a property owner that was using it as farming property. Port of Morrow then canceled the lease, sold the property to another taxable, would be a taxable owner, and then the thinking was there wouldn't be any back taxes owed. However, because of the timing of the disqualification of the property special assessment actually happens on January 1 rather than the timing of when the lease actually expired, there were back taxes that were owed That's been upheld by the court. So the change here that's being made in statute in the measure as the engrossed version is to line up the time when the lease, if you have an exempt owner, when they terminate that lease, that would be the time and when at which the property is disqualified for special assessment. So it would essentially allow, in the case of the Porto Moro experience, that property be disqualified at the same date, and that way you wouldn't owe that 5 and 10 years in back taxes. So it's just really tightening up some of that language that was maybe not clearly understood, certainly by the Porto Moro, because it was a bit of an unexpected billing for the back taxes. So that's the change in the 3171 engrossed version, and we didn't have anyone signed up. I don't believe we have had anyone sign up in the past 2 minutes.
Doesn't get much more technical than that. This is Representative Greg Smith's bill. But since he's not here, we're going to kill it. No. This bill did pass the House 60-0. Does the committee feel like we have enough to go on?
How much money are we talking on this particular incident? Do we have any idea?
Yes, Senator. So we have the fiscal and the revenue impact statement. The fiscal was a minimal. The revenue impact statement gave it a minimal as well. Now, for the Porto Moro, it was $250,000 thereabout. That's pretty, I would say that's more or less unexpected. That can happen on occasion. But certainly, and what I included in the statement was, I don't think the port understood that the taxes were going to be levied. And now with the court decision, that would be better understood. So I think it going forward, governments would be a little bit more careful in when they do this timing of it, but it really is a pretty rare instance. The measure did, the original introduced measure did have a retroactive clause. That was taken out. So the date does start with this upcoming property tax year. So it won't affect the Porto Moro case. Those taxes have been levied, paid, and that they will stay that way.
And the county assessors aren't testifying.
We had the assessors on the House side, and that was part of the language that came out with the -2 amendment, was per the assessors, yes, a couple fine-tuning changes, and they ran it by the Porto Moro assessor as well, who was involved in the case.
Okay. I guess I'm okay.
You okay, Senator?
Yes.
Senator Riley?
Mm-hmm.
Senator? Okay, we're in a work session. Senator Riley, will you do us the honor, since Senator Boquist isn't here?
Oh, what bill are we doing here?
171.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3171A be moved to the floor and do pass recommendation.
Senator Riley moves that House Bill 3171 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boettiger.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Chair Hass.
Hass votes aye. House Bill 3171 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do pass recommendation. Senator Boquist will carry this bill.
Oh, of course.
Maybe.
There's a price to pay for a missing community. I'm going to close out that work session and open up a work session on Senate Bill 28. Chris, maybe if you could just refresh our memory on this and the amendments that we're working off of, which I think are the 12s.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 28 is the bill that changes apportionment for C corporations that sell intangibles or services. It moves them from a cost or performance approach to the market-based approach. We are looking at, or the committee is considering the -12, and we've gotten to that point. There has been a lot of discussions between the banks and the Department of Revenue. There's been, from my perspective, general agreement on that concept. They just want to make, both parties want to make sure that the language excludes banks. We're basically talking about a policy that affects UDITFA companies, so that means not utilities and not financial institutions. Those entities, the apportionment for those companies are handled through another statute and through rule by the Department of Revenue, but the rule points back to the statute, so both parties, all the stakeholders, want to be very clear that the -12 does not affect utilities and financial institutions.
Okay, and we do have Paul Crossgrove here. Did you want to come up, Paul, and your team and Mr. Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Cosgrove representing Oregon Bankers, and thank you for considering the Dash 12, which has been the result of a number of days of work between the department and with the help of Mr. Alnanak and the financial institutions who are under this special rule, as Mr. Alnanak has described, always have been, and this does not change that. And so this clarification is very helpful and appreciate the work of the committee and the staff.
Mr. Henderson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. That is exactly understanding of this as well. So the Dash 12 would just clarify that these provisions do not apply to 314-280 filers, which would be the financial institutions and public utilities. They are required to apportion income under a different statute outside of UDIPA. So this just clarifies that.
Questions of these two on that technical part of this overall bill? I will double down on that intent that this amendment does not and isn't intended to change the allocation of income for those taxpayers, which includes financial institutions and public utilities. Those taxpayers will continue to be taxed under the statutes and rules that apply to them currently. And SB 28, with these Dash 12 amendments, do not change that.
Thank you. Okay. That's very helpful.
We're good on that part. All right. Thank you both. So we've had several hearings on this. This is a measure, of course, that makes the corporate income tax more consistent, brings the services in with the traded sector so that basically Oregon sales are what will be figured in under this market performance change. It's technical, yet a fairly significant change to make this consistent. We had testimony from several business groups that this will simplify and give them more certainty. Notable to me among them was Amazon, who said, even though we're going to be paying higher taxes here, we support the bill because of the certainty and simplicity. So I'm ready to move forward and send this measure to the floor.
Peachy Keen.
Senator Boquist, thanks for joining us.
I wouldn't miss the opportunity to move motions and vote no. I move the Dash 12 dated 5/16/17 into SB 28.
Senator Boquist moves the Dash 12s into Senate Bill 28. Any discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 28 as amended with the Dash 12 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves SB 28 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, I'm here, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bertschinger.
I'll still be voting no on this bill. I still firmly believe that it is a revenue-raising bill. It should not start in the Senate. And so I will be voting no.
Thank you. Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bertschinger.
No.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
No, thank you.
Chair Hass.
Hass votes yes. The measure goes to the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation, and I'll be the carrier. Close out on that one and move to a work session on Senate Bill 333.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for Senate Bill 333, there is an A6 amendment in AULIS. And so generally what the measure does is directs the Oregon Business Development Department to obtain employment and wage information from the Employment Department for the eligible employer at regionally significant industrial sites. And it adds minimum employment requirements to sites that are developed under the program and removes the requirement that the sponsor have a contract with the industry located on the site, and also removes reporting requirement from the industry on the amount of taxes paid by employees. The information from the Employment Department would instead provide that information. And so there's a small change in the A6, changes references to compensation to in the employment requirements to be the wage instead, because the information is more readily available on that. The measure has an indeterminate revenue impact. Essentially, it results in an increased amount of money out of the general fund and into the local government sponsor, into their funds. And also, I think there's a net positive revenue impact to the measure if these types of programs actually spur economic development and site new businesses in the state. There could be a lift there overall to the revenue impact in general. The measure has been found to have a minimal expenditure impact for a fiscal impact.
Questions? We held a hearing on this, I believe, in March. Okay. Another.
What's the amendment? We're moving the A6.
Nobody's beating the door down.
No.
We have nobody signed up.
It's the A6, right?
For this. Yes. Well, we're in a work session only. I'm sorry. All right, Senator Buckwist, you.
Yeah. Okay. Give me a second. What's the date again? There it is. I move the A6 dated 5/18/17 into SB 333.
Senator Boquist moves the A6 amendment into Senate Bill 333. Is there any discussion?
Only that I don't think I've ever seen a negative but indeterminate fiscal before, but a revenue impact. But it's the first time for everything.
Remember that.
I will.
Okay.
But it also says positive.
First
but
time
indeterminate.
For everything.
That's right. Boy, I walked into that ambush, Mr. Chair. Okay.
She has an answer for you.
So ordered.
No, I don't worry. Is that just fine? Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 333 to the floor as amended by the A6 with it do pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 333 as amended by the A6 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bertschuger.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yes.
Chair Hass.
Hass votes aye. The measure moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do pass recommendation. This feels like a Senator Taylor bill. Employment, industrial land.
May I remind you, I was the first one here this morning.
I'll carry it. Fine.
You're Save already me. On another one.
She told me I was on 3171. Is that right?
That's right.
Danny voted no on something.
Yeah. You know, well, no good deed goes unpunished, Senator Taylor. I think you can get out of this one. All right, that closes out our agenda. Joint committee tomorrow, and we'll be back with these other bills on Wednesday. Thank you. Tomorrow, and we'll be back with these other bills on Wednesday. Thank you.